Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk. Today we're going to talk to a guy who has written a book on Shane Victorino, the Flying Hawaiian. In case you don't know who that is, he's on the Philadelphia Phillies, a Major League Baseball team, and he's one of my favorite players on my favorite teams. And he's here to talk about this book, and it's published by Triumph Books, and his name is Alan Maimon. Hello.
Hey, David.
Hi, am I saying the name right, Maimon?
You got it right.
I always tell myself, well, you should ask how to say the name first, because every once in a while you butcher a name, and then the author is too kind to tell you that you butchered it.
You nailed it.
Are you an expert on Shane Victorino? Would you consider?
I am now. if the question is what sparked my interest and what was the impetus for writing this, I kind of viewed Shane Victorino as somebody who was not only one of the most exciting players playing the game today, but from the personality standpoint, kind of a lightning rod. Always the one being quoted in the newspaper, and he's kind of the face of the team in some ways, even though arguably he's not quote-unquote the best player on the team. And sort of my journalistic senses started tingling, and I thought, you know what, this guy, coming from where he comes from, the island of Maui, and some of the things I had read about his struggles as a kid with ADHD, I thought, you know what, this would be a pretty compelling book to write.
And it certainly is compelling to read. I mean, it's just interesting to see the background. We all have favorite players in baseball, and I watch the Phillies practically every game. In fact, I'll probably be watching them tonight. In fact, over the weekend, Shane hit a inside the park home run, which is very, very exciting. And that doesn't happen too often, so I was really pleased to see that. But he is exciting. He's got a great personality, and he's always there to throw a pie in somebody's face at the end.
Yeah, he became sort of that guy. I think every team has that guy, the one who's when a rookie maybe hits their first walk-off home run or something like that. Yeah, Shane's going to be the one when that guy's doing the interview after the game to pie him, and I think he takes great pleasure in that. A little bit of a prankster.
Right, and how can you be a bad guy if you're doing things like that? You know, you don't even, I mean, they work with these people all day. I'm sure they know them, but, you know, it's still to throw a pie in somebody's face. You know, you don't do that to everybody you know. You have to be some kind of a nice guy to be able to do that to whoever you want. I mean, you have to have a reputation, I guess is what I'm saying, as a nice guy.
Yeah, the sense I got was that Shane, being the prankster that he is, being the vocal guy that he is, he talks a lot, that he is so well-liked that teammates from spanning his career in the minors up until now with the Phillies, they know that that's what Shane is all about. And even when he might, you know, come close to crossing that line into annoying somebody, they take it with a laugh because they know that's Shane.
I would guess that the playing those pranks is kind of fun for him. I mean, he's number one, trying to think up what you're going to do next and who you're going to play a prank on.
I think one thing I learned in doing this book was the inordinate amount of time these guys spend with each other during the course of the season, and how important it is for not only the chemistry in a clubhouse to be good, but also to have the levity from time to time. So, yeah, Shane certainly fits that role. And I mean, again, if you think about it, they're playing almost every day for 6 months. And I think that what separates a good team from a very good team, or a very good team from an excellent team, is not just the talent that is on the field, but how these guys get along off the field. I think that is kind of an underrated quality in teams.
Now, when did you first meet him? I mean, how long ago are we talking? I mean, and how many times did you meet with him for this book?
I'm based in Las Vegas. He makes his off-season home in Las Vegas and has for several years now. He played minor league ball here for a couple seasons. We started doing the interviews last winter, so the winter of 2010.
Was he always open to do this? I mean, there was no resistance at all?
He was pretty open to it. He's had his share of ups and downs, I would say, with the Philadelphia media, because they're great at what they do, and they will call you out when they feel like you need to be called out, and he, like many of his teammates, have been called out by the Philadelphia media before, but I think he has a pretty thick skin when it comes to stuff like that. So when the opportunity arose for him to really tell his story in detail, I think he was pretty excited about doing it. And we first met, I guess it would have been February of 2010 in Las Vegas, and did several interviews here in Las Vegas before he went to spring training. I then went to spring training for a little while, and we continued it there, and then sort of wrapped things up early in the regular season last year. Probably did about 12, 15 interviews altogether.
Now, what was your first impression of him when you first met him? I mean, what went through your head?
Whenever you meet somebody, whether they're a professional athlete or not, you kind of get a first impression of whether somebody is a, body language, facial expressions. He just came across as a very friendly, down-to-earth guy. We started chatting, I think the first things we started talking about were not baseball. I think when we met, it was really cold that day in Las Vegas. I think we were talking about how cold it was unseasonably in Las Vegas that day, but just, started chatting. He is really quite the regular guy, so first impression was very positive.
Now, sometimes I know Chase Utley has a reputation for being very quiet and keeps to himself a lot, which can you blame? Everybody's different. I mean, I don't hold that against anybody. I mean, but Shane seems more of an open guy. Was he open to most things, or was there anything that you asked him that he didn't want to get into? I mean, was there anything that he had a problem talking about? It seems like this book is very open about him and about his past and, how he...
Well, I mean...
how he got to where he was.
Yeah, the fact that he had absolutely no problem with me talking to his child psychologist, whom he went to see when he was a teenager because of his attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Obviously, when you talk to a medical professional, there needs to be a HIPAA release, and
right.
he granted that. So no, there really wasn't any topic that he shied away from. But I think you're right. I think there are members of the current Phillies team that are a little more reticent in terms of talking to the media, and that's why Shane fills a pretty important role, because he, even after a loss, even after a tough loss, he's the one that is talking and is willing to talk and shakes off losses and comes back the next day. And I think his teammates respect him for that, because he when they're not particularly in the mood to talk, he will do it.
Yeah, and like we were saying before, there's a lot of downtime on the team. I mean, you're playing, but there's times where you're sitting on the bench and you're not doing anything, especially if you're on the disabled list. I mean, you can imagine what Chase Utley's going through right now, how incredibly bored he must be. And you still have to go to each game and still have to, I mean, it's tough for the players. I mean, if you get hurt, I mean, all you can think of is, oh my gosh, 30 days of doing, just sitting, holding down the bench,
yeah,
supporting the team.
Yeah, nearly the whole team experienced that last year with all the injuries they had. And the book documents last season, so it's pretty up to date in terms of going all the way through the 2010 season and playoffs. And Shane was not immune from that. He went on the disabled list. I was actually in Maui doing some work on the book when he got hurt and went on the disabled list. And the concern from his family, because I think we got the news sort of at the same time, was, it's scary. I mean, considering how many thousands of miles away they are from him, that was a scary moment for them.
Right. And it's interesting to read this book and you relive the seasons. And, of course, I remember when I was reliving them day by day during the season, and how hard it was, what they went through, and, losing to the Yankees, which was very difficult to watch. And still, when I think about it today, I get upset. It was just one of those, things you didn't want to happen, but you could see it coming. At least after a while, you could see it coming. I mean, you never know for sure, and sometimes I'm a little negative, I know that, but sometimes, and the scary thing with the Phillies is that sometimes they just can't hit, and you want your team always to be able to hit. Now, but you saw Shane when he had those games where he couldn't get a hit, where he was frustrated, so you got to see all of that, didn't you? Or did you?
I would, some of the interviews we did were during periods where he was in quite an ofer. He might be coming off three straight games where he didn't get a hit. I, to his credit, he was able to kind of be philosophical about it. He, like many other players, is well aware of the fact that if you get three hits in every 10 times you're at bat, you're probably going to be in the Hall of Fame, so that you have far more failures than successes. But yeah, he went through some real down points last year, even though he set career highs with his power numbers. So it was definitely a challenge for him, especially hitting from the left side of the plate, which the book really goes into great detail about how he took up switch hitting at a relatively late age and how he's battled to really perfect the left-handed hitting. And last year was a struggle for him. But again, to his credit, he was able to kind of reflect and be philosophical about the slumps he was in and really pulled it together in September of last year and helped the Phillies attain the best record in Major League Baseball because he had a great September, as did some of the other players.
What do you think sets him apart from just your average baseball player? I mean, there's something about Shane Victorino that's different, that is more dynamic. Do you think he's just more talented than a lot of players? I mean, in your mind?
He's a tremendously gifted athlete, there's no question. But putting it in the context of Phillies history, I'm a native of Philadelphia and kind of know about the history of the team and kind of came of age with the 80 World Series team and then the 93 World Series team as well. Putting it in the context of the Phillies history, he's that guy. He's that Richie Ashburn. He's that Lenny Dykstra. He's the guy whose personality is really a perfect fit for the city he's playing in. And how he performs on the field, the legging out the triples, it's just a perfect complement for this for the city that really I don't know if Philadelphia is a town that really most respects the biggest and the strongest as much as the guy who's a little bit smaller like Shane, the guy who's plucky, the guy who hustles. That is what I think sets him apart and what makes him such a good fit for Philadelphia.
Yeah, certainly. And you wonder about the camaraderie with the team. I mean, it must be like a family. I mean, like you said, they're around each other a lot, even more than their wives, you know. I mean, they see the frustration on the other players. So it must be like one big family. Did you get that feeling?
Well, I talked and I probably interviewed 100 or more people for the book. It's a third-person biography. It's not an autobiography, so...
Was there anybody who wouldn't let you interview? I don't want to name, but, I mean, was there anybody that wouldn't let you interview them?
There was one person who I attempted to interview face-to-face in both Florida and Las Vegas, who both times declined. Not necessarily because he didn't think highly of Shane, just maybe because this ball player who is a former Philly... has a reputation for being a little reticent. We'll leave it at that.
Now that you've got us all curious, but we can't say. And I didn't expect that answer, so I'm a little taken aback myself.
What was remarkable was how I would reach out to people from all over the country, guys who played minor league ball with him and who haven't talked to him in years, but who just right away just, oh yeah, you're writing about Shane. Absolutely, I will talk to you. Opponents from, I spoke to players on other teams, but in the Phillies clubhouse, such a range of backgrounds from Joe Blanton from Kentucky to Jamie Moyer from the Philadelphia area to everybody just had such nice things to say about Shane. Jason Worth, some of what Jason Worth had to say was cut from the book just simply because he was reflecting on how great it was to be a Philly.
Right. I miss Yeah, I miss Jason Worth tremendously, and that's the trouble with baseball. Your team is your team, and then all of a sudden one of them is traded, and you feel like you've lost part of the team, even though there's going to be somebody to replace him. You still remember the whole team together. I mean, even though Jamie Moyer's not pitching right now for the Phillies, and I don't think he will be anymore, he still was a tremendous encouragement to the whole team. I mean, sitting on the bench and being encouraging, and that's tremendously important, too. Does Shane come off as that way, too? Is he encouraging with the other players? Does he tell somebody to get back up if he sees somebody's down or go over and talk to one of the players? Does he seem that way too?
I think he's always been that way. There's an anecdote in the book where back in high school when he was on the football team and setting state records for the longest field goal, Hawaii State high school records, he would also return kicks. So there was a situation where he returned a kick that's 90 yards for a touchdown and was a little too winded to make the kickoff, so the backup kicker made the kickoff, and the backup kicker happened to be a girl who was on the team. And she kicked the ball off, and sure enough, the guy who was returning it broke through, and there was one person left to tackle him, and it was the kicker, and she took him down, made the tackle. Shane, first person off the bench, out on the field, high-fiving her. I think that story kind of, and it has carried over to today. If you watch games on TV, you can see him with the fist pumped in the air after a big hit. Definitely great player, but a pretty good cheerleader as well.
Would you consider yourself a friend of Shane Victorino's now? I mean, have you guys bonded at all?
I'm a journalist, and I admire.
Not allowed, huh? No time, really.
I've gotten that question before, right? I don't know. I enjoyed working with him on the book. I hope he enjoyed working with me, and I think it turned out pretty well. And it's always good to see him for sure. And I try to adhere to the journalistic credo of no cheering in the press box. I guess what I do in the privacy of my own home is my own business. But it was good working with them on this.
Anyway, I don't mind to tell you, I was crying after we won the World Series. I mean, I cried the whole night, and it just moved me so much that here was a team that had come. Years, 10 years ago, it felt like we had no hope to ever win a World Series, and here we were winning one. And he was such a big part of it, and the whole team just, it was like watching a tsunami. I mean, they just took over every team they played in 2008. I mean, they just literally ran over every team.
It was a special year and a long time coming, and the curse of Billy Penn and all that good stuff, and how no team had won a championship in so long. And then, of course, the circumstances of the Game 5 in which they clinched the World Series, being divided up into two parts. It was Phillies fan or not, it was definitely a memorable finish to a World Series, and he had a great postseason that year.
Now, is this your first book, or have you written other books?
This is my first. Sort of what I've done up until now is I've been a newspaper journalist, kind of specializing in in-depth, long-form pieces that, when you add up the lengths, are not that much shorter than books. So I kind of got around to thinking that, hey, maybe it's time to test the book waters, and hope to keep doing that.
Right. And you enjoyed it, obviously. I mean, the book reads like you thoroughly enjoyed doing all the research and writing the book. Is writing as tough as you thought it would be? Is it tough, or is it all fun for you?
I enjoyed it. I mean, there's a lot of discipline involved. I did not miss a day from, early June of last year to all the way through September, every day, a little bit, chipping away at it. I think the part I most enjoy, though, is the reporting. It was a lot of fun trying to track down certain people, certain former managers from the minor leagues or...
Yes, you made a lot of phone calls.
A lot of phone calls, some in-person visits, but yeah, lots of phone calls. And so the reporting was a lot of fun. And then when it came down to writing it, it was fun, too, because it's really kind of a book written in two parts. The first part is how Shane... got to the major leagues, and that includes his childhood and his high school years and the minor leagues. And then the second part really focuses on, what could be considered the golden age of Phillies baseball, which is once he made the majors, that kind of coincided with the Phillies. It wasn't solely attributable to him making the majors, but it just happened to coincide with him making it, how they have won now, several division titles in a row.
Right. Now, he was born in what year, Shane?
He was born in 1980.
So he's 31 now.
He is 30.
30. It's soon to be 31, I would guess.
Soon to be, after the season, he'll be 31.
You think about that. I mean, he's obviously going to last a lot longer than Lenny Dykstra did. which is nice too. I don't know how many seasons Lenny Dykstra lasted with the Phillies. It didn't seem like it was very many, but sometimes they fly past. I know Ryan Howard's had six already, and it doesn't seem like six. It's amazing how fast the season goes by. You don't even realize it. I mean, we're already 20 some games into the season. It doesn't seem possible.
Yeah, I read something today that the average age of the Phillies is something like 32 and a half years old, which is old by baseball standards, but it's also peak. Those are the peak years by baseball standards. You know, the core of the team has more or less stayed together the last few years, but I think you correctly point out that, yeah, the time does go pretty quickly, and I guess the way you work towards longevity is doing what you can do to stay healthy. The fluke injury will happen, but staying healthy, which I think Shane has an excellent off-season workout regimen with a pretty, you know, I would say world-renowned trainer here
now,
in Las Vegas helps him.
Right. Now, he works year-round. He works out year-round. Is that true?
I mean, think about it. What has made, I guess, the downside of going to the playoffs and making a deep run into the playoffs every year is it shortens your off season. So by the time, you know, he gets back to Las Vegas and visits family in Hawaii for a little bit, yeah, I mean, it cranks right back up again in terms of getting in shape for spring training.
You have to keep in good shape, and it's tough. I mean, you're constantly being watched. You're constantly being criticized during the season. I mean, everybody has an opinion about you, and that's got to be. You're in the spotlight. It's like you're totally in the spotlight all the time, and it can't be easy. You think, well, they're doing what they love to do. Yeah, they are, but there's a lot of work involved too.
Yeah, and I think if people take a look at the book, I find it interesting when I learn the players. There are a couple players who have come out recently and said that they have social anxiety disorder. Well, Shane doesn't have that, but he does have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. It's a disorder, and when you're under the spotlight like you are, I just find it fascinating. It's hard enough to deal with one of those disorders when you're not on national television and you're not being watched by tens of thousands of people. When you are, I think that makes it even more challenging.
What would we see if we knew Shane better than we did? What would we see that would indicate he had that hyperactivity? I mean, is it just that he can't? It's hard for him to sit still. I mean, how does it show itself?
Well, I think it's gotten better. He took medication as a child, and then he stopped taking it because he thought that the disorder would go away on its own. Well, when he realized in the minor leagues that it hadn't, he started up on the medication again. So it's largely under control. However, if you were to say, Shane, what's your favorite movie? He would say, you know what? I don't really watch too many movies because I can't really focus on it, on something of that length. So it's probably things like that. If you're in a conversation with him, you wouldn't notice it. But I think in his personal life, he probably has to adjust things because he's not able to maybe stay focused on any one thing for too long a period.
I wonder how many Major League Baseball players there are like that with what he has. I mean, do you think there's a lot? Do you think there's or just some others?
Well, I mean, in order to take the medication for the disorder, you need a waiver from Major League Baseball. It's the Adderall, the Ritalin, those type of medications are on the banned substances list. So if anybody has it, they have to come out and say they have it. I think there are at least a couple other current major leaguers, the names escape me, but who do have it and who have that exemption to take the medication. There have also been players, I believe, who have been sanctioned for taking it without having the waiver, because if you take it without a need for it, it has sort of the opposite effect. It doesn't have the calming effect that it has on somebody with the disorder. It has more of an upper for those who don't have the disorder.
Now, I like the way in the book where when Shane first got on the Phillies and he was trying to get a position in the outfield. In the outfield, there were like four or five people that could take the positions in the outfield. So it was really a competition to see, you know, who was going to get that spot. And you know, it could very easily have gone against Shane.
It could have. I think that what really boosted his confidence was an outstanding year at Scranton Wilkes-Barre in 2005, where he was the International League Player of the Year, got called up to the Phillies in September, had a really nice last few weeks of the season, which included his first Major League home run off Tim Hudson, one of the best pitchers in the game. So coming into camp for 2006, I think he had the confidence he needed to say, okay, I want to stay. This time I'm going to stay in the majors. And as things turned out, the Phillies made a trade that season in which they traded Bobby Abreu, their longtime fielder, to the Yankees, and that really opened the door to Shane, and he earned it. His performance that season, playing kind of in a platoon role off the bench, he earned it and never looked back once he got a starting position in the middle of the 06 season.
Do you really think he was that so determined that it was going to happen somehow?
You know, yeah, I feel like what's great about sports is there are certain athletes where you can look into their eyes, whether, you know, when they're at the plate or when they're shooting a jump shot or when they're going back to throw a pass, there's a look in their eyes that kind of lets you know that they're going to almost will something to happen. And I kind of get that sense from Shane that the determination was so strong that it was going to happen.
Now, you, which season did you sit and watch him most of the season? I mean, you followed him through some. Which was it? 2009?
No, it was last season.
It was 2010. Oh, that was the season where they had the best record, and it didn't end as well as we all wanted it to end. That was quite a frustrating season. Toward the end, it was very frustrating.
Yeah, it was a moving target because I'm writing the book and intending to reflect what happens with the season in the book, so I'm kind of just watching, waiting, going to some games, watching a lot of games on TV, and just waiting basically for the end of my book to be written. I wrote it, but it was really written by the circumstances, and yeah, as we know, the Phillies came up a little bit short last year, but still had a pretty amazing season with a postseason no-hitter by Roy Halladay and the best record in the majors. And yeah, maybe it leaves a little suspense. It's kind of like the end of, you know, Rocky, right, where Rocky loses at the end,
right,
but comes back in Rocky 2. So
right,
maybe there will be a final chapter written if things work out for them this year, as they hope.
If they start hitting more, yeah, we need some more hitting. But it's early in the season. It doesn't mean a whole lot right now, although, you know, things change, but hopefully we're going to start hitting better and better as the season goes along, which tends to happen. I'm wondering, with all the players, do they feel the frustration like we do as fans? I mean, when we sit at home, we're like, oh, come on, you can do this. And you see Ryan Howard strike out four times, or you see somebody go 0 for 5. Or what is it like for, what was, did you see any games where Shane was like 0 for 4, and what was it like for him? I mean, can you see the frustration on his face? Can you, I mean, does he, and does he still keep his confidence even after a game like that?
Yeah, I mean, there were games where afterwards, with all the reporters surrounding him and the others and asking questions about either losing streaks or slumps, that where, you know, there would be, you know, the voice would get raised a little bit and the frustration would show. But, you know, on the other hand, I kind of look at it this way. We all, you know, anybody who has a job and goes into work every day, and we all have bad days at work, and
mm-hmm.
hopefully most of us can come back and say, you know what, okay, this was an 0-for-5 day. Even though I'm an accountant or a police officer, I went 0-for-5 today.
Well, the only problem is when you're a baseball player and you go 0-for-5, you have to wait a whole night to make up for it, and it's got to be frustrating. You go back to the hotel and you think, oh, I just want to get a hit right now. You know, I just want that. I want to break out of this so badly. And that's
true, but at least it's not like football where you got to wait a whole week, you know? So
right, exactly.
I think a key part of succeeding in the major leagues is just kind of keeping a cool head about it all. It's amazing how even the best players go into 0-for-30 slumps or whatever. It's what makes the game of baseball so fascinating, and you know, Shane has certainly had periods, even this season, where it seems like everything he puts into play is a hit, and I think they just come to see the tears and the slumps kind of as the same things. You know, you're going well, don't question it too much, just keep doing it. You're not doing well, don't question it too much, because, you know, it all comes around.
Right, and And baseball is such a game of frustration. I mean, there is just unlimited frustration in every game. I mean, no matter what, there's something. You know, you watch your teammates, you watch your team not play well, or they play well, or they have three games in a row where they play great, and then they play lousy for three games in a row. It's going to happen. It's going to happen sometime during the season.
But it's going to happen that sometimes you'll absolutely smash the ball and hit it as hard as you can hit the ball, but it's going to land in somebody's glove.
I wonder which of his relatives did you speak to? Now, I know he was close to his grandfather and grandmother, really, really close to them.
Yeah, they've since passed away.
Did you get to talk to them before they passed away?
No. They all passed away several years ago. Most recently, during the 2008 playoffs, actually, that would have been his paternal grandmother. He still has one living grandparent. I spent most of my time talking to his parents, his brother, his older brother.
Mm-hmm. What's his older brother doing these days? I mean, what kind of work does he do?
His older brother is a longshoreman.
Okay. Yeah, you do mention that in the book, yes.
He's a longshoreman and Shane's idol, really. Growing up, wore all the same uniform numbers as his older brother did. His older brother played college baseball in Hawaii and then went and worked as a longshoreman. And it's just, you know, it's reciprocal. Shane
Now, is there a picture
idolizes.
Is there a picture of him in the book?
I don't believe there is a picture of Shane's brother, but the resemblance is there.
My brother Mike Jr., yeah, that's him, right?
Oh, he's in there?
Yeah, the first page of pictures. I think Shane's in the middle there, right? And then his brother's to the left there. Yeah, you can see a little bit of a resemblance. That's that Shane Victorino smile. That's that kind of smirky smile that we're so used to seeing. It's definitely got to be him.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, is that a younger of them when they're younger?
Yeah, seen here with Mother Jocelyn, Father Mike, and Brother Mike Jr. Rambunctious child with an insatiable appetite for sports. Boy, they must have been. I can only imagine what he was like at that age. You know?
Yeah, again, if people pick up the book, they will probably learn a lot about how Shane, as a child, he often had a hard time. Positively channeling his energy, even though sports were a godsend for him in terms of a release, he still had some problems on the field as a child, behaving himself. Let's just leave it at that. And some pretty interesting anecdotes in there about him getting tossed out of games.
How has Shane dealt with fame over the years? I mean, is it tougher? I mean, you see entertainment people like actors and actresses, how they have a rougher time because they don't have the sports players don't have the paparazzi going after them unless they've done something really bad or something major has happened to them. But how did Shane deal with fame, and did you get a sense of the other players in the Phillies how they deal with fame?
Well, at his wedding in Hawaii a couple of years ago, the paparazzi showed up more because one of the invited guests was John Gosselin.
Oh, right, yes.
From John and Kate Plus Eight, and at that time, John and Kate were very much in the news. So,
how did he meet him? How did those two become friends?
You know, John and Kate, when they were together, lived in the Philadelphia area.
So, oh, right.
I believe they were Phillies fans, and that's how that came to be. And John came to the wedding, and there were the paparazzi kind of from across the water with their telescopic lenses. Shane didn't mind it at all. He was kind of jumping up and down and waving and all that stuff, whereas I think other celebrities would have thrown a fit about it.
So he's pretty much okay with it.
Yeah, good sense of humor about everything. Doesn't get too worked up.
Where does he get his sense of humor? Where does he get all this stuff from? Is it just the fact that he's so outgoing? I mean, does he get that from his family, do you think? Or is it just in him?
You know, I think both his parents are remarkably nice people and also funny people, good senses of humor. I would have to think it largely comes from them. I think that I met some of his friends, some that he grew up with. They too have good senses of humor. So I think it was just he grew up in a good home and had good friends and just developed that.
Now that you've written a book about a baseball player, is your goal to do to write about other players, or have you given any thought to doing that, or has this made you want to write other books about players?
Yeah, you know, I do have another one in the works that probably be more comfortable talking about once, you know, the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed on it. But yeah, I really, you know, this is I think it's fascinating to kind of get inside the career and the life of a professional athlete, because so much of what we know about them is from the box scores and from the little sound bites in the newspaper and online. So yeah, baseball books are certainly something I'd love to continue doing, and but also would not rule out other forms.
Right. Now, who first called him the Flying Hawaiian? What a terrific nickname. I mean, and I think you even mentioned in the book, you can comment on this too, but you mentioned in the book how other teams kind of look at him like, oh, you know, that Shane bugs them in some way, that he gets on their nerves. Is that, did you sense that while you were watching him during the season?
I think he's the proverbial guy that if he's on your team and you root for that team, you love him, and if he's not, then you tend not to love him, because he is a spark plug, because he gets that, you know, gets the key hit that will beat another team. I think other teams' fans maybe focus on him a little bit in terms of being something of a villain. Mets fans in particular. In terms of the nickname, that was a hard one to actually, that was a challenge to figure out, but he credits actually a New York Mets announcer with coining it early in his major league career. And I found nothing to refute that. So apparently, ironically, it was a New York Mets announcer.
How's that? I mean, who would ever think that? And you know, you'd think it'd be somebody in the Philly. You think it'd be Harry Callis or somebody, you know, or when Harry Callis was still alive. And you know, it's such a great nickname. I mean, and to have that nickname, it's an endearing thing. When you have a nickname, it means people love you. It means that there's a lot of love that you're going to feel. I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Oh, it's great. I think that we're in an age where nicknames aren't as prevalent as they used to be. I mean, baseball has always been about great nicknames. Yankee Clipper, Splendid Splinter, you know, great nicknames, right? And that's kind of gone away. But yeah, with the Flying Hawaiian, kind of brings it back.
Right. Now, when did you first get into baseball? I mean, have you always been a baseball fan, or has it grown over the years?
I've always been a fan. I started going to, you know, with my dad. And
you are a Phillies fan, right?
Well, I grew up in the Philadelphia area, so my first exposure was going to the vet, and we would normally sit up in the 700 level at the vet and take in a few games a year, and I certainly grew up to the sounds of Harry Callis and Richie Ashburn, and just definitely, you know, weaned on Phillies baseball. I haven't lived in the Philadelphia area now for 20 years, so kind of haven't been as close to it as I once was, but that was my introduction to it.
But do you still turn the TV on and watch a Phillies game when you can sometimes?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. If, you know, MLB Network, ESPN, Fox, yeah, if the Phillies are on, I'll definitely tune in, because I think that anybody, Phillies fan or not, this is an exciting team. This is a potentially historic team.
Well, let me tell you how it feels once you do win the World Series. I mean, you feel an instant camaraderie with everybody who's a Phillies fan, and everybody you see, you feel like going up and talking to them. I mean, there's such a sense of one huge family of people that just love the Phillies, and it's such a, and now that their popularity has grown even more, I mean, you see them at the San Diego game the other night, all the way out in San Diego. So I mean, they're all over the country, and they travel all over the country with. But that's such a wonderful feeling, and I think that's part of why it moves me so much when they win, because you feel like you're just part of a huge group. You feel instantly part of millions of people who just love these Phillies.
Yeah, there is a Phillies nation now. While I was writing the book, I caught games in Phoenix and in San Diego. And yeah, the number of Phillies fans was pretty staggering.
Now, was there any surprise about Shane that you didn't expect? I don't mean anything bad, but I mean any kind of a surprise, something about him that you didn't expect to find out?
I knew he had the ADHD. I guess I didn't fully understand how hard it is for a child who has that, and I was surprised to learn that, as I said earlier, those sports were a great outlet for his energy, that still, even on the field as a child, he had a hard time controlling his emotions, and that would lead to outbursts and ejections from games. And what I found absolutely fascinating was how he was able, through the course of his adult life, to bring that under control. I mean, he's a guy who plays the game passionately, but rarely, if ever, lets his emotions get the better of him. He's been ejected from a couple games, but he's not one of these guys who just flies off the handle all the time. Well, when he was a kid, that wasn't the case.
Now, emotional, is it always anger that comes out? Was it always anger that came out, or was it tears? Or how would his emotions get away with him? I mean, what exactly would he be feeling? Is it mostly anger?
Yeah, the incidents I write about, it was mostly anger. There was one incident where there were some tears, but in most cases it was angry outbursts directed either at not so much at his teammates, but at opponents or at opposing fans on the sidelines, stuff like that.
Being one of seven kids like I am, tears never got me anywhere. People just ignore me and step over me, you know. It's just like, you know, he's crying, so what? You know, when you're an only child, it's a little different, I think. You tend to get more noticed, but it's interesting what a child will do to get noticed sometimes.
Yeah, and I don't know if he had these outbursts to get noticed or whether it just was a situation where he needed... He was taking medication as a child, but what he really needed was to sit down with somebody, a professional, who could give him the counseling he needed, and he found that person in a doctor in Maui named Alfred Ahrensdorf, who I spoke to for the book, and Dr. Ahrensdorf really helped him kind of talk through some of his issues.
There's something I wanted to ask you now. It's totally left my head. I just love the way that you explain all these different things, and we go through his... and see what he was like growing up, and see, you know, how he changed over the course, and how he got on the Phillies, and how he made a name for himself, and all the work that he's done. I mean, there's never an end to the work that these athletes do to prepare for games, to play in games, to after games when you win or lose, and still having to, like you said, talk to the press and deal with the fans, or, you know, you never know who's going to approach you. I mean, somebody come up to you after the game as you're leaving the parking lot with a gun. You never know what's going to happen. Anything could happen. It's being in the public eye is a hard thing. It can't be easy.
Yeah, especially nowadays with Twitter and all that stuff. You know, there's just all these different, you know, ways information can get out. And if somebody sees you, and maybe you're having dinner with a friend or with family, and don't have time to sign, well, somebody can go on Twitter. And
you think about all the things you say. You have to be careful. Every little thing you say could be twisted and turned into something bad when you don't mean it that way. Like the comment Jimmy Rollins made about the fans, you know, it comes out sometimes in anger. That's why you have to be careful what comes out of your mouth. I mean, as any famous person has to deal with that. I can't imagine what that would feel like, to constantly be watching what you're saying and doing.
Yeah, while at the same time trying to focus on your craft and taking natural ability, which gets you pretty far but not all the way, and just making sure that you're honing your craft while at the same time kind of doing the public relations stuff. Yeah, I think that is something that maybe a lot of people don't take into consideration. I think Shane does a good job, really good job with
now,
that.
Now, in your future books, you're going to write about other players. You are going to write about players on other teams, I take it, not just the Phillies.
Yeah. The one that I'm close to signing off on is not a Philly or former Philly, but a very... a guy who played the game the right way and who off the field was an extremely respected player. So yeah, I'm definitely not limiting myself to the Phillies, but would not rule out doing another one on the Phillies either.
Did you ever watch any of the games and think to yourself, well, I know what they're doing wrong. I could go up and tell them what they're doing wrong. Did you ever feel that way?
Oh man, if I were able to do that, I'd probably be on a coaching staff somewhere.
You must have seen something. I mean, somebody.
Every fan's an expert, right? I think we've all
we've
all seen things. Oh, you know, why is he swinging like that? It's like, you know, No, but I can't really think of any. I mean, I've seen situations where, I'd like to see the Phillies maybe run a little bit more.
Absolutely. Well, we saw him change it over the weekend, so that's a good thing.
That was a good start, yeah.
And I think, and it's funny you say that, because that was what I was thinking all the next day. You know, why can't we run more? Why, we need to be a running team, because I think we'll get farther if we do. Not that we didn't get far last year. We got very far last year, a lot farther than I thought we would get. But, you know, as a fan, you always want more. No matter what you have, you always want more.
Yes, they're, I believe, 15-7 right now, which is one of the, if not the best, one of the best records in baseball. But, yeah, there's always concerns and question marks, and that's what makes the game interesting is you can't sit back and say, oh, this is, you know, a cakewalk. There's always going to be something that is nagging at you that if they don't fix it could be a problem later.
Now, I want to ask, with all the time we have left, about Charlie Manuel. We haven't talked about him. What is, obviously he's very close to Shane, as he is to all his players, but what, I don't know, how does Charlie just sit there and he seems to be so level-headed about everything. You never really see him lose his temper unless it's something, it's a play that he doesn't agree with. Then he loses his temper, but that's justified to me. But, I mean, how does he stay so calm all during the game? How does he do it? You've seen him firsthand. Can you tell us?
Yeah, there's a little bit in the book about how in stark contrast to his predecessor Larry Boa, who was, you know, always
raging,
that Charlie Manuel's personality is the opposite, and the players that I talk to for the book just all rave about that style, that he trusts them to do their jobs. He knows they're professionals.
How does he keep it all together? I can't even imagine how he does it. I see him and he's chewing his gum or whatever he's chewing. I think it's gum. I think he chews bubble gum, doesn't he?
I believe so, yeah.
But, you know,
he's a laid-back guy, which, but as you said, when a call doesn't go the Phillies' way, he'll be the first one out there taking on the umpire. But, yeah, excuse me for that.
That's okay. We all know about kids. But that's what that astounds me, his ability to just remain calm. I mean, Billy Martin wasn't able to do it, but Billy Martin was still a good manager, despite the fact that he couldn't remain calm. But the calmness in Charlie Manuel is so unbelievably, is something that I just admire in him. I admire in the whole team. I mean, I think of myself and I think, well, if I were out there, I'd be pretty angry if I couldn't get a hit. You know, I'd just be frustrated and tell people not to speak to me and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's so easy to be that way, and it's much harder to not be that way.
Yeah, it's worked for them, and I think that is that speaks to you know, Charlie's philosophy working under Larry Boa. I guess a lot of the players didn't respond well to that, and with
and it's funny, when he first got the job, nobody was thrilled about Charlie Manuel, as I remember. I mean, everybody was kind of like, I don't know if he'll work. I don't know if that's going to work. Everybody's kind of, you know, unsure. But, boy, he won people over quickly. And, you know, it's just amazing. We have, in my mind, the perfect manager. I don't know that we'll ever have the manager as good as Charlie Manuel ever again.
Yeah, I think the organization showed its support for him by extending his contract, and he's folksy. He's from, you know, rural Virginia, and you know, but
he's good people is what he is. He's just a good person. And we haven't even talked about Shane Victorino's charities. He does a lot for charity. He's a hero within. I mean, he's just one of those people that kids can look up to. That's what we need with sports nowadays. We need to have athletes that kids can look up to and say, I want to be like that one day. I want to help others. I want to work hard for my money. I want to help others who aren't as fortunate as I am. That's the kind of people we need to look up to, in my mind. I think that's the perfect athlete.
And he set up his foundation last year and is active with that and has events during the season, and well, actually a book-related event that he will be having a week from this Saturday, May 7th, at Citizens Bank Park.
Now, you're going to be there with him?
I will be there, yeah. I'm going to make the trip in for that. Should be an exciting day. The Phillies play the Braves that night, so the signing is in the morning at 10 a.m.
That's terrific. That's I would very much look forward to that. Boy, what a day that's going to be for you. You've already met him, I know, but it's still, I mean, to be anywhere near a Phillies player, it would be a thrill of a lifetime for me. But I just admire him for the way he does that, for the way he helps people. You know, and I think that it makes you a better person when you're able to help other people. I mean, who of us aren't enriched by helping others in some way?
Yeah, and he's genuine when his generosity is one of the first things that people who know him well bring up, that he is.
And let's hope it spreads to everybody on the team and every other team, because it's a wonderful thing. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking with it. Well, it's been so wonderful to talk to you. This has been a terrific time. I've enjoyed it immensely. And the book, again, is called Shane Victorino, The Flying Hawaiian. It's out from Triumph Books. It's in all your bookstores. Alan Maiman is the author, and he's been talking with us for almost an hour. So it's been great. Thank you so much.
Hey, I appreciate it, David. Thanks a lot.
This has been David's Book Talk, and we will talk to you next time.